This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Though Joanna Callow and I have very different professions, she's a writer, producer, director, most recently of The Bear. I'm a cook and founder of a restaurant, The River Cafe. We have a lot in common, and most of it involves drama. Hers is creatively working with actors. Mine is creatively working with chefs. People always ask me, how does a restaurant work? On The Bear, Joanna and her colleagues brilliantly answer these questions. A friend of mine just told me today that Joanna makes the hardest thing funny with lightness and sensitivity, and that she is a great woman. So, here we are, here in LA, and I'm in London, which is the first mistake of this moment. I wish you were here. Are you sitting in your office?
I am in my office in West LA, but I wish I was there more than anything. I think I might just get on a plane right now.
Right now, we could go to the River Cafe. Have you ever eaten the River Cafe?
I haven't. I haven't had the pleasure.
You've never been? Okay. Well, we'll do that. We'll go. Maybe you could bring your children. How old are your children?
Oh, God. Not yet. They're 5 and 2. She's ready. The older one is ready for restaurants, but you don't want the boy anywhere near you.
Oh, I would. The other day I was flying back from Milan and I saw this woman with a baby and I said, oh, I hope I sit next to you. And she said, you're the first person who's ever said that. Why would you want to sit next to a baby? So I think what we could do is start with the recipe, which you've chosen. It's formata di spinaci. And perhaps you could read the recipe and then we can carry on with our conversation.
So now you will see that I am the least Italian person. Sformato di spinaci, serve 6, 1.3 kilogram spinach, stalks removed, 2 eggs, 400 milligrams double cream, milliliters. It's very British. 100 grams freshly grated, 1/2 teaspoon grated nutmeg. Preheat the oven to 375 Fahrenheit. Beat the eggs and cream together for a minute in a large bowl. Add the Parmesan, nutmeg, and season. Blanch the spinach for 1 minute and drain well. Chop roughly and mix the egg and cream mixture. Pour into a medium-sized baking dish and then place in the preheated oven for 30 minutes until the top is crisp and the spinach is still slightly creamy.
So tell me about growing up in your household with food. Tell me what life was like in your family, food-wise.
Well, that's honestly why I chose this recipe. I had an interesting childhood, which is that my parents bought a house in Northern California that we shared with their best friends. So we had a little mini commune.
They shared a house. That's interesting.
I think we lived upstairs and they lived downstairs. It was a duplex in Alameda. And it was really wonderful. It made me one of 6 instead of one of 3.
Yeah.
And it means I had 4 parents. And it also meant that my parents and, you know, my parents' best friends, they were all working. So all you needed is one parent to watch all the children. But I think that's sort of a theme in my life is that both my parents worked. My dad was a journalist. My mom was a nurse who became a librarian. It's like when she was in nursing school, I think there was less cooking than when she was working full time as a nurse. She still was getting dinner on the table, but it was very regulated. It was sort of like there are the 4 dinners that you always make, and then you kind of cycle through that. And there's something so charming about that. So like these meals are completely ingrained in our lives. And it was like boiled zucchini with melted cheese on it. That was one of the things we ate. Hamburger patties with Campbell's mushroom soup poured over it.
Yeah.
That's like, I think, very Midwestern, you know. And then she is Spanish. She comes from Mexican parents. And so she would also make enchiladas that were amazing. And my dad is Italian. And on the weekend when he was home, he would make his sauce that cooked all day. And so, you know, I definitely got to have that. And
and
the family that we lived with, they were Hispanic also. And sort of had a closer connection to that Hispanic culture. And so we would make tamales at Christmas and some of that And so this baked spinach made me think about how we used to get the frozen spinach. It was like the Stouffer's frozen spinach. And it was not as good, but the same idea. And you would just put it in the oven. And that was how they gave us vegetables some nights. And my dad called it princess food because it was like a spinach souffle. It was such a good memory. When I was looking through the book, I was thinking about that and about how, you know, that is so the act of a parent that is trying to do their best, loves their children, but also has to put a frozen meal in the oven because they're working, because they're busy. And some of those, you know, influences came from my other family as well. And it brought me a lot of joy to see this recipe.
I'm interested still in the commune. Did you have one kitchen for the two families, or did you each have your separate kitchens?
Each had separate kitchens. And I think that there were sort of different rules in each kitchen, so you could always have fun.
What were they? What was the difference?
If it's not your mother, you're always going to get away with a little more, right? So it's like, their kids would come to us and we would go up there. We would swap around and try to take advantage of the system.
Is this all your childhood?
No, not my entire childhood. Maybe when I was 5 or 6, we moved to another house.
Oh, I see.
In Oakland. And then when I was 8, we moved to New Jersey. And that was a sort of another chunk of life.
What was that like, New Jersey from California?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It felt like I was in a movie with fall and spring and snow days. And I definitely romanticize all of it.
Did you eat differently?
Yes. I had all the foods that I was supposed to have. I ate pizza constantly, bagels constantly.
Oh, yeah. Somebody said to me that there was a big deal about you eating in a bagel place. Is that right?
Yes. My senior year of high school.
I don't know. Sometimes they do research for this. What was it called?
Bagel Chateau.
Bagel Chateau. Okay,
oh
so
God.
this is Willem, and I don't know what Bagel Chateau is.
It's just the place in my little town. I grew up in a small town called Maplewood, but every single day for my senior year of high school, I ate at the Bagel Chateau.
Good for you. Good
oh, my God. You. Every day.
Same bagel or different bagels? You see the detail we get into on this, you know? We ask the questions that really bring back the memories.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay, so here were the things I would get. I love a sesame bagel. Love. So I would mainly get sesame bagel toasted with tuna. And then they always put pickles and chips on the side. And it was just a really good dill pickle. And the chips, I mean, they were probably just from a crappy bag, but they were spectacular. Like little ruffled chips. And I dream about those chips still. And then I would also sometimes get sesame toasted with cream cheese and tomato. I guess it's the Garden State. They were getting good produce. Yeah. You know, the tomatoes were great. They were good. And the lettuce was great. You could get, like, my friends would get something called a nothing sandwich, which they stupidly invented. It was like a vegetarian sandwich, just no one knew to call it that, basically. Yeah. But it was just bagel, mustard, tomato, lettuce. And then, you know, that was it.
It's like a BLT without the bacon. Yeah.
Without the bacon. But it was like crisp and tasty and fresh. And I think some of those things that we didn't entirely know we were craving yet.
Do you think it's still there?
It's still there.
It's still there. So your parents still live in New Jersey?
No, my parents actually left. When I graduated high school, they moved back to Oakland. My mother was, I think, tired of the pizza and the bagels. She wanted to go back to the Bay Area.
So food was important growing up. I mean, even the way you describe the chips, it sounds like it's important.
Oh, food was so important. I just loved it. I mean, I think coming from an Italian family, a Mexican family, that's part of the culture. But when we were living in New Jersey, we were very close to where my dad grew up. He's from Queens. And so we would spend time with our Italian family. And so that's all food. It's just about food.
Did your grandparents, were they involved?
They died when I was younger. But yes, my Italian grandma, the favorite thing that she made for me was the egg creams, which is just very like New York. We would go to her house and she would make egg creams for us. And, you know, we would eat pasta. The whole cartoon.
And what about Mexican food?
You know, my grandpa would cook for us and he would make chorizo and eggs. But they were, you know, you also just sort of go and you get you get Wendy's.
Did you go back to Mexico or Italy?
I have only been to Mexico City, and then I've been to Italy, but there's a pilgrimage coming, I think, for sure.
You grew up in this house surrounded by food, and when you left the comfort of this, and also a community, the idea that you had a house with other people, which we always go to Italy in the summer, and the house is full of families, different families, and we're all together and we meet up for breakfast or we meet up for lunch or swim, we do all this. And then everybody's so happy. This is what we love about the summer. And then we all go back to our own houses and you think, maybe this is another way of actually living, which we reject, you know, from
yes.
September to June, but then we embrace in the summer. You went to college or did you start working?
I went to UC Santa Barbara and I was planning to study marine biology. And then when I got there, there was also a film major. And I don't know why I hadn't thought about it, because I was obsessed with movies always. And I like to sit very close to the television so that I could try to go inside. And I didn't think about it as a job as a kid. I just thought about it as something I loved more than anything. And then I realized that my fantasy of being a marine biologist, of being on a boat and, you know, riding dolphins was really completely a fantasy and many years in the future, whereas I could study film and be lost in film immediately.
Do you remember what you ate in college?
Oh, my gosh. Well, my favorite sort of food story from college is that for whatever reason, I guess I didn't have cottage cheese as a child, or that just wasn't like common. And then in the dining hall, you could just get cottage cheese whenever you wanted. And so I had cottage cheese for every meal.
God.
And then eventually I was like, what am I doing? And I didn't eat it for probably like 10 years after that, because I would have it with my eggs. I would have it with lunch. I was just so obsessed with it, like an insane person. And I worked at the dining hall, which was a very strange and interesting experience, where I worked in the kitchen. I have such a strong memory of how much fun we had back there in our hairnets, but also how terrible the rubber mats would smell at night, you know, and you'd have to hose them down. And I was never a waitress because my brain doesn't work that way. I can't handle that responsibility. But I think waiters have a really hard job.
Don't you? I do too. I couldn't be a waiter.
But then I also in high school, I worked at an ice cream store, this wonderful ice cream store. And I have another really strong memory of I would hold the bowl and the person, I would look at the person and they would tell me their order. And by the time I turned around to the ice cream machine behind me, I had forgotten.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I wasn't cut out for that life.
Did you know the River Cafe has a shop? It's full of our favorite foods and designs. We have cookbooks, linen napkins, kitchenware, tote bags with our signatures, glasses from Venice, chocolates from Turin. You can find us right next door to the River Cafe in London or online at shoptherivercafe.co.uk. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With summer fast approaching, life tends to get busy. Seeing family, friends, hosting dinners, barbecues, picnics in the park, and everything else that comes between. What's also important is that we find time for ourselves to rest and recharge. Therapy can be a vital tool to assist you with boundaries and managing your schedule in a way that helps you stay happy and healthy. If you're looking to find a new therapist or start therapy for the first time, BetterHelp is worth a try. It's entirely online, which makes it easy, accessible, and flexible with your schedule. Completing a short questionnaire will match you to the right licensed therapist for you. If it's not working, you can change for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Ruthie today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Ruthie.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Talking about food, talking about being a waiter, talking about the ice cream, talking about the chips leads us into this idea that you made with Chris about food, about restaurants, about the drama of a restaurant and the drama of people who work in them. The Bear.
It is interesting how it does feel like all these things were leading up to he and I meeting in order to make the show. But I'll say that one of the huge things that happened to me that has to do with food was that when I moved to LA in order to pursue a career in television in some form, I started listening to the radio when I would drive because I moved to LA in 1999. Gosh, is that true? That's true. And yeah. There was KCRW, there was Morning Becomes Eclectic, and there was Jonathan Gold. And listening to him talk about food in the city and how food created a city was just life-changing for me. It just became a real passion for me. The idea of the way that a restaurant defines a city has like completely stayed with me. His thing about eating all the way down Pico and just being invested in your town and your city really inspired me. And I think similarly, I think Jonathan Gold led me to read Ruth Reichel, and I just adored her books.
Yeah.
You know, I just love them. I love food in books. I love it. The idea of describing something beautifully and being able to share that idea. My sister and I both have like the idea of food is sometimes even better than actual food, you know? And I just loved Ruth Reichel's writing, but also her passion.
Have you met Ruth?
I haven't.
Oh, we'll
haven't.
Do that. We'll do something. She's a great woman. And she's, you know, as you say, beautiful writer. And so tell me about, how did you meet Chris?
Yes. Chris Storer is the person who created The Bear. And it was really came out of his experiences in your world. His sister Coco was a chef, but I think he also had his own love of not just all food, but I think particularly, he had a point of view on the world of fine dining, what was positive about it, what was negative, but also that it was just amazing, that it was this secret world. And he had written a movie that was sort of The Bear and then decided to turn it into a TV show. And I had been writing for many years and we met in the most boring way, which is literally my manager was like, do you want to meet this guy? And I was like, oh, I guess. And we Zoomed during the pandemic. And I had read some of his scripts. And I just thought, not only did I love the way he wrote, but I mainly was like, I love this world,
for
all the reasons that we're talking about. And it was really exciting to me. We didn't know each other. We'd never met. We just met on a computer. And then we got on the phone and talked because I wanted to make sure I connected with him personally. And before we sort of launched into this whole thing, what is some kind of working relationship. And it just felt like I had known him my whole life. I think it has to feel that way. I've experienced different kinds of partnerships. And I think you either have this like partner chemistry or you don't.
Yeah.
And I think I just had this instinct that we had something in common.
How did you work together? How did you work? How did you write together?
You know, it's changed. In the beginning, we were just sort of trying to see if we could get FX to let us make the pilot. So that meant that I just gave him feedback and I was like, what if we tried this, or this is great, or let's move this up? Or, you know, I think not too surprisingly, he had created the character of Sydney and she was very much based on Coco.
Yeah.
But when I first read the scripts, she didn't appear until episode 3. And I said, I really like that girl character. Can we move her up?
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
I'm Sydney. I called about the soup position. I'm staging today.
And the fact that he was like, yeah, let's do it, I think was sort of the beginning of just us being able to push each other and change things, but always with keeping what's special about his voice.
What's UPS? That's in Chicago, or?
United Parcel Service.
Shit.
The one.
That's the UPS.
The mail. Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you do for them?
Sometimes I'm just helping him with his scripts. Sometimes we're writing together. Sometimes I'll outline and then he'll write. Sometimes we'll share. Sometimes he'll write scenes, I'll write scenes. Sometimes I'll just write a script by myself. That's the thing. It's completely fluid and there is no one way, which makes it really thrilling.
Okay, so you know the drill. You're going to make family. It's meat plus three and we eat around two.
Yeah, heard. Dope.
There are so many parallels between writing and cooking and teaching a chef to make a sauce or working with an actor to create a scene. And I think that restaurants are quite dramatic places. There's a drama between the chef and the other chefs. There's a drama between the chefs and the waiters and the waiters and the customers and each other. You know, you see people crying in restaurants. We've seen it in your series. We've seen the intimacy between people who are doing repetitive work, you emote. It's very emotional and it's very personal, do you think?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I don't think it had occurred to me how many similarities there are into my business and to being a chef, but they're so similar. And I think at the core of that is just passionate people, feeling people, and also just the humanity, right? It's like, that's what I love about The Bear, you know, especially season one, is like they're all jammed into this tiny space. Yeah. And so you have really different kinds of people. Some are leaders, some are followers, some are aggressive, some are soft, some are doing the repetitive stuff and that's where they feel best. Some want to create, you know, and they're all within 2 inches of each other. I mean, that's insane.
Have a conversation for a second. Whoa, is this?
This is Sydney. I'm staging today.
You're wedding today?
That's Sydney. She's helping us out today.
Cousin, you ordered a different mayonnaise, bro?
These bananas?
No, all you, chef.
Yeah, all you, chef. This biff, he was using them to make a giant nut muffin.
It was a play on a panettone. It would have been beautiful if you'd let me finish it, all right?
You,
cousin!
Richie Jeremovich. Pleasure to meet you, sweetheart.
Don't say sweetheart, you
Sorry,
weirdo.
Carm, you're so woke. I meant nothing by it. Sydney, saying sweetheart's just part of our Italian heritage.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Listen, I'm trying to talk to you, okay? Don't be rude and start doing a million things like a smart ass.
I don't have time. We have in the River Cafe an open kitchen. There's no wall between the person who's eating and ourselves. And when we first opened, a friend of mine who's a theater director came and I said, doesn't it look like theater? And he said, no, actually it looks like ballet because everybody is moving. Nobody can shout. We all go next to each other. We move around the kitchen and speak very softly. But I think that it was also interesting for me to see in your kitchens a kind of way of growing forward, you know, that how we move this profession of being a chef into being like a lawyer, like a journalist. And that's kind of what you want to achieve. You want that energy and that drama, but you also want it to be fair and you want it to be hope rather than fear.
Yeah, I mean, yes, of course we do. And also, I am really interested in this idea that I think we're always circling on the show, which is where do the hard edges fit in our lives? Do we need that? Do we need anger? Do we need release? Are we all trying a little too hard to push away the part of us that's saying that there's a darkness too? How does the darkness benefit us? Does it? I don't know. I'm interested in that for sure.
Tell me about one of the episodes that you directed that you'd like to talk about.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I'll talk about in season two, I directed the episode where Sydney is going out and eating everywhere.
Yeah.
Because that seems the most relevant. But I will say it was so hard. I mean, it was so challenging. We shot in so many locations all over the city, interrupting these restaurants that were just trying to do business, but they opened their doors to us, you know? It was such a special look into how those kitchens work because it was kind of like half documentary, half, you know, fiction. And so that was such a challenge to try to really tell honest stories about the people that worked there and to use real chefs, but also they have to act and they have to say lines. And I had to figure out how to direct non-actors. And then you had Io just eating every single food, every single thing. And I was so proud of her. I was so proud because it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to just eat. And like, you know, that moment when you're eating and then it's like you take one too many bites and it's no longer food. It's just like matter in your mouth. I'm always delighted by that experience. And Io pushed beyond that and really put a beautiful performance on the screen.
You wanted to talk about the pasta, but why don't you ask
I love that episode because there are two scenes in it that stand out to me. One is the beautiful way you show the montage of all the pastas on the plate, which is so beautiful. It really crosses, like you say, in the line of art and documentary and fiction in that episode. But I also love where Carmi and Sid are in the kitchen testing this pasta recipe together over his kitchen table. And I like the idea of when there are scenes like that, is it the food that influences the scene or is it the other way around? What food would involve both of them?
Oh, that's such a good question. I love that scene too, because I think, are you talking about the one where they taste it and it's bad?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. Mm. Oh my God.
Mm-mm.
Chef, that's way too much acid.
Oh my God. Did I fuck up your recipe or?
No, I must've just given you the wrong count. It's fine.
Wait, do you need Rolaid or something? Did I give you heartburn?
No. It's, I'm sorry. And sign.
Yes. I was like, oh, it's so funny to be like,
yeah,
sometimes it's bad, right? Like I realized we hadn't seen that. You know what I mean? We hadn't seen a mistake and that's obviously such a character moment too. But I just liked the idea that we often see in movies when they take the bite and it's delicious, but I hadn't seen the other thing. But I think for us, it's all connected. Like sometimes we'll write in a script a certain food, right, for that scene, a certain dish. But then when you get into pre-production, you actually sit down with Maddie Matheson and Courtney Storer, who, you know, are our food consultants, and we create a whole menu, not just for the restaurant, but for the show. So we worked backwards because we were like, okay, at the end of the season, she's going to have this version of this dish. So then working backwards, what do we need that to be? And we had this idea of doing this ravioli thing you guys were talking about and sort of the visual connections of ravioli and ravioli's connection to dumplings and to pierogies and sort of just this idea of just like stuffed pasta, right? So we wanted it all to be connected. So it could have honestly been anything, but we sort of tried to make it cohesive so that you could follow her thinking and her creative path through the whole season.
Do you think differently about food? Do you think that working in this way where food has become a performance, it's become visual, it's so many people involved, has that intimacy that you had at Chateau Bagel or living with your mother, how does that translate?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think for the most part, I still feel like the small moments at home are the best food moments. You know, when I cook for my kids, my daughter wants pesto pasta. They want pretzels. They want good pretzels. They want tasty honey pretzels. Like, it's the simple things that actually make your life go around. I do feel really lucky to have been able to go to some really good restaurants because of the show. And it's still so magical and so special. Thinking about it so much, I do feel worried about food waste and all the unpleasantries of the business of food and how I'm so privileged to get to go to some of the places that I get to go. And so I think I worry about that sometimes, but for the most part, I still think food is spectacular and makes the world go round.
Tell me about the women chefs that you met. Let's talk about women.
I love talking about women. Yeah. I mean, I'll start with Courtney, with Coco. What a force, but also what a beautiful connector of people. She was with me when we were shooting that episode with Sydney out in the city, and we were in this pierogi place that's been there forever in Chicago, and she said, come here, come with me. And we walked into the back and she was like, it's all women. Also, that idea that you could just walk into the back of a restaurant is so crazy. You know, that's so cool. But she took my hand and we walked in the back and it was all Polish women. And it was this very beautiful thing. And she was like, do you see? And I think she completely opened my eyes to this thing where there is such a tradition of male chefs, right? And we are dealing with that in our show. And obviously, so many of our famous chefs are male. That is just the world. But her showing me that these kitchens are full of women and talking to me about how does a woman communicate versus how a man communicates in the kitchen has been just so inspirational and such an important part of the show. And so, I mean, Coco's my number one woman in food.
Yeah, we love Coco. And do you feel, is there a parallel in television?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, I think that idea of trying to figure out what tone of voice to use. Like my voice is kind of low. And then thinking about, well, do I use that low voice or do I use like my little voice? You know, those kinds of questions are things that I have had to navigate as a director. You know, as a writer, it's easier. You kind of just sit and you press your little buttons. And for me, I find that really easy. But being a director has really been an experience in trying to figure out how to be a female on set.
Do you find it a lonely place?
Yes. I think directing is lonely in general. And Chris and I have talked about that. Obviously, I'm still learning. Maybe when I'm better at it, I'll feel differently. But I think directors are also siloed from each other too, you know? So it's because you don't direct together. You all have these different ways of doing it. There isn't really an easy way to compare and contrast. So even though you're collaborating with each person on the set, ultimately, you are in your own lane. It's definitely lonely. Is being a chef lonely?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what Coco, when I spoke to her today, she said, I love being a chef and being in a restaurant is that it's very, very collaborative. You know, that if someone doesn't chop the parsley, then you can't make the sauce. If someone is late, I would say it's a very good place for young people to work, because if you're late, you don't get in trouble with your boss. You get in trouble with, you know, the people who are depending on you. And so it teaches you that collaboration. But I think that what we're all trying to learn is how you give feedback, how you give criticism, how you take criticism, all that. And I started the restaurant with another woman, with Rose Gray. And we have had a very strong percentage of women in every role. I don't necessarily think women cook differently than men. I don't go for that. You know, we cook with more gentleness or more love or more attention. But the dynamic in the kitchen when you have women and men together as opposed to men or just women is really apparent.
Yes, I think you're right. And I'm excited to explore that more. What is it like to be on a set with more women? What is it like to be on a set that's 50-50? What, you know, I just don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I think those are things that I want to experience.
And so what are you working on now?
We are writing season 3. Of The Bear. That's really fun. that's the easy part.
You're not on Zoom calls with Chris. Are you together in an office?
No,
writing?
we do Zoom, unfortunately. But I think we're going to try to have dinner in a couple weeks.
Where would you two of you go? Do you have the same taste in food?
We want to go to New York. We want to meet up in New York and go eat some good food. That's our plan.
Do you eat out much? Do you go? Can you take the children or do you?
I ditch the children and I go out.
Yeah.
And I love my kids so much, but I think eating out is such a luxury and it needs to be not about telling them to be quiet because they deserve to be loud.
Yeah.
They should just be loud inside.
Yeah. Okay.
If you like listening to Ruthie's Table 4, would you please make sure to rate and review the podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com, that's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
We're talking about drama. We're talking about food. We're talking about the brilliant, beautiful series you've given us, you know, that I think you've made people want to know about restaurants. You people want to know about cooking. You've had empathy for people who are either behind the kitchen or in front of you or who are grilling, who are creating. The curtain goes up and everyone sits down. And I think on the behalf of everyone, we thank you. It's very interesting how I talk to the chefs about it, you know, that everybody in the River Cafe is watching it, and we talk about it and we relate to it and we say what's different about our environment to the environment we see. But there is a real representation, I think, that you've created for us.
That's so wonderful. I mean, we are so grateful that people are watching. Like, truly. I mean, I had no idea that people would respond to it this way. But I'm so glad and so grateful. And I also just, it's really nice to have something to connect over. I do think that's something I miss about television when I was younger, was because there were less shows, you could kind of really connect. Everyone sort of had a moment to say, well, what does this make you feel? What do you like about it? You know, whatever. Even just saying your little catchphrases or whatever, it's like, that's a way for us to have a community. Yeah. And so it's so lovely that people are feeling connected.
No, we are. We are connection. Food is connection. Drama is connection. People are connection. And my last question to you is comfort. You've described the joyousness of eating and the joyousness of feeding your children and the joyousness of your parents' kitchens. But sometimes we do need comfort in food. And I was wondering, for my last question, Joanna, is what is the food you might turn to if you need comfort?
Ruthie, I think you know what it is. I want a bagel, with cream cheese, and I want potato chips on the side.
Okay. Well, we will find that. When I see you in New York or in London, we'll just go and we'll eat at the River Cafe and I'll take you in the kitchen. But most of all, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Ruthie's Table 4 is produced by Atomized Studios for iHeartRadio. It's hosted by Ruthie Rogers. It's produced by Willa Malinsky. Our executive producers are Zad Rogers and Faye Stewart. Our production manager is Caitlin Paramore. Our production coordinator is Bella Cellini. Special thanks to everyone at the River Cafe.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com. That's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
There's two kinds of people in the world. People who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.